You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into this Locked On Eagles, Locked On Bears crossover podcast. It's not really Crossover Wednesday anymore, but it is never too late in the week to bring the Locked On Podcast Network together just to bring you the local experts on your favorite team. I am Lauren Cox from Locked On Bears, joined by Gino Camilleri from Locked On Eagles. Did I say that right? Camilleri?
Yep, you got it.
Okay, good. So joined by Gino Camilleri from Locked On Eagles, and we're going to get the scoop on what I personally think is going to be the most exciting of the wild card matchups. I think you've got two teams and two fan bases that feel pretty strongly that their team is the one that should win. Not that other fan bases don't feel like their team should win in the playoffs, but when you have the defending Super Bowl champions against a overachieving, up-and-coming young Chicago Bears team, I think there's plenty of tension here. There's plenty of maybe misconceptions about the other teams, and I think there's going to be a lot for us to break down here. So I really appreciate you joining me today, Gino.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of Eagles fans are really excited for this matchup. You guys did us a favor, and now we might have to return the favor and kick you guys out of the playoffs, unfortunately. But just to start, who would you have rather been playing, Minnesota or Philadelphia?
So I do not, without a question, I do not doubt, or I don't question Matt Nagy's decision to play the starters and beat the Minnesota Vikings. I think regardless of how it would affect the playoff standings, getting that win was important. But to directly answer your question, especially with how Week 17 went, the Bears would have preferred to play the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, they took the Vikings to the woodshed a little bit. Not that it was a huge blowout, but just they were the physical tone setters. The offensive line was more, aggressive than it had been in weeks past. They got the running game going. They really took control of that game and looked like the far superior team, and I don't know if they would have had a ton of trouble repeating the same thing again in the wild card round. But instead, they get a Philadelphia Eagles team that is, well, it's not the team that they were last year when they went on their playoff run and when they had home field advantage, but still an experienced roster. You know, most of the guys from that championship team still there. The same quarterback as they went through the playoffs last year. To tell me a little bit about the phenomenon that is Nick Foles and kind of how both of these last two seasons have kind of, it seems like on the outside they've gone a little bit similarly in the sense of Carson Wentz gets hurt late in the year, Nick Foles comes in and just continues to play well.
Yeah, just in general, I mean, regardless of Nick Foles or Carson Wentz, this season has been an absolute roller coaster. I mean, last year, they were going to beat everybody. They were the team of destiny. They didn't have many injuries. Everything was going their way. When Carson went down, Nick just came in and didn't really skip a beat. And even though he struggled the last couple weeks, he just stepped right in there and the Nick Foles magic hit. And the same exact thing happened this week. The one term that I've been hearing him coined as is the best closing quarterback in football. And I think that's exactly what he is right now. He goes on the road and beats the Rams, something nobody thought he could do. He goes and beats Houston again. Then they go and they shut out Washington. Not a great Washington team, but still, it was a must-win game, and Nick Foles came up big. And there is really no explaining the phenomenon that is Nick Foles. You go back to his magnificent season of 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. He can't really recapture the magic after that. He goes to St. Louis, almost wants to retire after that. And then he found where he needed to be, and he came home to Philadelphia. And let's just not think that Nick Foles is just some average Joe Schmo quarterback that's backing up a very good Carson Wentz. They're paying him $20 million this season. They knew exactly what they were getting in this guy. They got what they wanted out of him last year. They got the Super Bowl, and this year he picked up right where they went off. And this team, it's always been the philosophy to invest highly in the quarterback position. When Carson came to town, they brought Chase Daniel in. Then they bring in experienced Nick Foles. They bring in a Nate Sudfeld, who has very good tools to be the third quarterback, maybe going to be the backup quarterback next year. But all in all, this quarterback room, they really mesh well. They balance well off of each other. And I don't know what it is, man, but when Nick Foles gets in there, everything just starts to click. And this is the time of the year that you want him to click, and they're really getting back to where they were in 2017. And last week and the week before and even the Rams game, it was the closest thing we've seen to the 2017 Eagles. And I don't know what it is, the game planning, the calls that Doug Peterson is making, but Nick Foles really excelled again, and I love him. I'm an Eagles fan, true and true. I don't think there's a quarterback controversy. I don't really care to discuss a quarterback controversy. As long as my Philadelphia Eagles are winning football games, I'm happy.
So what is it that has made Nick Foles so good? Could you characterize, you know, his style of quarterback play? Because I think, you know, Bears fans that don't really follow, you know, obviously don't follow the Eagles that closely and haven't watched a ton of Nick Foles, I think you maybe think back to the younger days of Foles and, you know, you saw him make some nice throws in the Super Bowl, but he still kind of feels like, I think there's some perception on the outside that maybe he's still a little bit more of a game manager and maybe can make some nice throws in there, but there's still some doubt, I think, from a national perspective of, okay, just how fluky he has his success been. And so could you kind of characterize what he does well and kind of how he's able to, or how this Eagles offense looks when he is operating at a high level?
So when Carson Wentz is out there, Doug Peterson puts a lot of trust in him. That's one of the main reasons they moved up to take him in the draft, is because when he was in the classroom, everything just stuck out. He knew the game better than 99% of the people on the field. So he made things overcomplicated. But when Nick Foles comes in, he goes back to almost a Chip Kelly-esque style offense when Nick Foles really excelled. He slows things down a lot. They throw in a lot of mesh concepts. In space, you have Zach Ertz, who he can look to at all times. And the connection he has with Alshon Jeffrey is just otherworldly. He throws the ball up to him, who, you know, he's an unbelievable wide receiver in one-on-one situations, jump ball situations, and Nick trusts him. So Nick trusts his guys and guys trust Nick. It's not like many backup situations where timing's going to be off a lot of the time. Nick gets it. He's very good at understanding the routes. He's good at taking the check down, something that Carson hopefully can grow into, but Nick is experienced and knows when to throw the ball away, take the check down. His yards per attempt isn't the greatest. It's not world-beating numbers, but he plays it safe when he needs to, but he also takes shots. They've created some big plays downfield, but you're going to see very basic style offenses. And Matt Nagy, who comes from the Andy Reid tree, much like Doug Peterson, you're going to see a lot of the same concepts you see in that Chicago offense in this Philadelphia offense, with these basic get guys open 5 to 10 yards in those intermediate areas, work the short areas with bubble screens, get your running backs into space, really open things up. And if you have to take the check down, they'll take the check down. I know Mitch Trubisky, he likes to do that too. But these guys, I think both these quarterbacks, if they see a shot downfield, they're not afraid to take it. And that's basically how I can sum up Nick Foles.
It sounds like where Nick Foles has been in recent weeks and even dating back to last postseason, it sounds kind of where the Bears want Mitchell Trubisky to be in this offense. Mm-hmm. That where Nick Foles is thriving is where the mark is for Trubisky to hit. And we've seen flashes of Trubisky being able to do that at times this year and even at times during individual games, but still a lot of the checkdowns, like you mentioned, they both take care of the ball. They both are trying to, you know, especially as the season's gone on for Mitch, not try and do too much and let the offense come to him, let the receivers make plays for him, and then, you know, when he has to try and make a play, then do so, but really not trying to force it or do too much while still mixing in those shots downfield. So I think the parallels here at the quarterback position are interesting. Even if Foles might be a little bit farther along from where Mitch is, there's still his inaccuracies. There's still some throws that he definitely needs to take back and can improve on. But it'll be interesting to see if playoff Mitch is able to kind of get up to the point of where playoff Nick Foles, or at least trying to get close to the point of where playoff Nick Foles might have been in recent years. But I want to switch our attention a little bit to this Philadelphia Eagles just in a little bit here after a quick break. So thank you for tuning in to this Locked On Bears, Locked On Eagles crossover podcast. Of course, I am Lauren Cox with Locked On Bears, joined by Gino Camilleri from Locked On Eagles. And Gino, this defensive battle, I think, as much as it's fun to talk about the quarterbacks, and I want to get into a few specific matchups a little bit later on, but I think this is going to be a pretty strong back and forth between a couple of pretty effective defenses. I know the Eagles have had some real injury issues, something you mentioned they didn't really have to deal with as much last year. But what's kind of the characteristic of this Eagles defense? It's still, you know, it's still that kind of strong, aggressive Jim Schwartz, you know, still rushing four and getting home with a pretty consistent pass rush. It's still, I guess, the style there. But how have injuries kind of affected what they want to do, and how will that play into Sunday's matchup?
Yeah, so you could basically go throughout the season and just pick a week, and this defense just changes all the time. One of the things that Doug Peterson mentioned a couple weeks ago in a press conference was the big challenge they had to overcome was just the consistency at any position. I think they've put out maybe like 9 or 10 different cornerbacks out there this season. They lose their safety, Rodney McLeod, early in the season. He has to be replaced with Corey Graham, who isn't the greatest player in the NFL by any stretch of the imagination. But no, you hit it right on the head. As of the last couple weeks, when this defense has really started to come into its own, that front four has really dominated. Fletcher Cox, he's 1B for defensive tackles in the NFL currently. He should be right up there in the discussion with Aaron Donald. His feet are just so quick. His use of hands is unbelievable. His functional strength is just otherworldly. The guy could lift a bulldozer. He's unbelievable. But they're just getting production from all levels at that front four. They were missing Tim Jernigan a lot of this year with a back injury. He's starting to come into his own. He was very explosive the last couple weeks. Haloti Ngata has really shored up his calf injury, and you've seen a lot more explosion out of the aging veteran, who in this playoffs has the most experience out of any defensive tackle, which I think comes in big in this entire matchup, along with a guy named Michael Bennett, who we got for a fifth-round pick. I like to toss that in there because it was basically robbery. He's had an unbelievable season. But then you move outside of the hashes. That's where things get a little slippery. Outside, we have Avante Maddox, who is our fourth-round corner. He's really playing the best secondary defensive back rookie season since maybe Lito Shepard and Sheldon Brown in the early 2000s. And on the other side is Rasul Douglas. He has more of a safety-style body and body of work to him. He's very good with his range left to right. He's not very good when he has to flip his hips a lot. So in regards to a matchup, I think if he's lined up against a guy like Allen Robinson, who's a little bit bigger body, unlike an Anthony Miller, that would be the matchup I would like to see. But knowing Matt Nagy, knowing how great of an offensive mind he is, he's going to try and get Rasul Douglas, who likes to play off. He's going to try and get those guys in space. I know he likes to throw those quick five-yard, those slants and run a lot of mesh concepts and get guys out into open space, which these Eagles corners outside of Avante Maddox really struggle with. Right now they have Cravon LeBlanc as their slot quarterback, who you guys are familiar with in Chicago. He was last year I was at the game when Carson Wentz pulled off that Houdini play against Chicago, and Cravon LeBlanc was the individual who blitzed down on that play and missed the tackle, if you want to go back out and check that highlight. But it's just really a mishmash of guys, but it would really be a disservice not to mention Malcolm Jenkins. He's really the heart and soul of that defense, and every single game the last few weeks he's came up and made impact plays all around the football. And if these guys can come out and make quick get a turnover, because that's where they've been excelling these last couple weeks, I really think they can start to get to Mitch and really shake things up on that front four. And when this Eagles front four is flying around and they can cause havoc, the games get very interesting. And I can't really say that I would be less worried about the Bears front four, because they are just as scary.
Yeah, there's some parallels there between the two defenses as far as, you know, pass rushing being, I think, that really critical factor for the success of the Bears. And I imagine the way I usually describe the Bears defense applies to what the Eagles have been able to do in terms of the pass rush really being that catalyst to the turnovers and the big plays, that because they can get home with four, the people in the secondary can be more aggressive on routes and can, you know, go after some of those turnovers and trust that the pass rush is going to limit quarterbacks from holding onto the ball very long and being able to extend those plays and let things open up and develop deeper downfield. I think the difference being that the Bears secondary has stayed pretty remarkably healthy, and the Eagles haven't certainly had that luck. But I've kind of got my eye on a little bit of the back and forth with the linebacker position, because you're going to see Zach Ertz obviously matching up with a lot of Bears linebackers and safeties. crises. But on the other end, you've got Tariq Cohen out of the backfield and lining up at wide receiver quite a bit too, that you're going to see the Bears try and match up with these Eagles linebackers. And I think that's going to be a pretty key back and forth. I, from what I understand, I think the Eagles have struggled at times with some running backs out of the backfield. Am I off base at all there, or how would you characterize their linebackers and to some extent their safeties to kind of come up and take on running backs?
In regards to covering anybody that's not Tariq Cohen, I'd feel pretty confident, but they have struggled with that. And for a guy who is as elusive and works as well in open space as Tariq Cohen, I think this is the one big matchup that the Bears have to look to expose, because as good as Craven LeBlanc has been the last couple weeks, I don't trust him to defend Tariq Cohen. He's not the most fast twitch guy in regards to his hips, and Tariq Cohen can just cause mayhem for guys like that, because you see how fast his legs move. He's basically Darren Sproles light, and we know how much havoc Darren Sproles can cause on opposing linebackers. So I think that is the one area they're going to try and have to take him out of the game plan completely, I think, is the big deal. I think you want to work on those injured wide receivers with Anthony Miller and Allen Robinson, and you want to take your chances there and really limit the damage that Tariq Cohen can bring, because if he gets into the flat, he's going to break off 25 to 30 yard receptions every single time. It's just the Eagles defense has very, very big issues covering those style routes. And for a guy who you can't even consider him a linebacker, he's just an undersized slot receiver for how much he lines up outside the hashes. He's just unbelievable. And it really is a salt in the wound, because the Eagles had a chance to draft him and they just passed him up. But hindsight's 20/20. That's the one matchup I am scared to death about, especially because our linebackers have been relatively inconsistent in coverage. Jordan Hicks is just going to be coming back from an injury. Our outside linebacker position has been the big question mark all year. Are you going to see a Kamu Grugier-Hill who has a little bit of speed and can cover, or are you going to see a Nate Gary who you don't ever want to see on the field in the playoffs, but it might be the ultimate reality, because I don't want to see Corey Graham coming down and covering Tariq Cohen, because it's going to be a touchdown every single time.
I forget how many former Bears there are in that Eagle secondary.
It is
Corey
really
Graham,
crazy. Yep.
LeBlanc, DeAndre Hall also there as a backup safety.
Yes, I forgot about him.
There's a lot of connections. Well, as far as the Eagles side of the ball goes, I think in the same way that you describe the Eagles having to lock in on Tariq Cohen, the Bears defense has to do something similar, I think, with Zach Ertz at the tight end position, just with how dominant he has been this season. And I want to get your analysis on sort of how he's utilized, because I think that's a finer nuance to the tight end position that it's harder to pick up on the outside. But from a defensive standpoint, I would expect the Bears to not necessarily outwardly double team him over the middle of the field, but they will sort of give him more attention, in the sense that when they sit back in their single deep coverages, if they're in cover one, that underneath zone linebacker or safety in the middle of the field, he's going to be spending that, you know, keeping that eye on Zach Ertz and maybe keeping a little bit of closer space there. And when they're in cover three or any of their other, you know, two or three or one or two deep zones, they're underneath zone defenders. If they've got two receivers running through their zone, I think you'll see them likely, you know, keep a couple feet closer to Zach Ertz and stick more on his hip and be willing to allow the catch, to allow the space to other receivers kind of working in their area, knowing that they can just squeeze a little bit tighter on Zach Ertz, try and force the ball to a couple other receivers and let other guys make the plays instead of the clearly the Eagles' most productive receiver this season. How has he been able to be so productive? Because it's 116 catches and over 1,100 yards and 8 touchdowns. He's obviously more than just a security blanket. So how have they been using him?
So the last couple weeks, he's kind of faded, but he's still elite in many aspects of his game. I don't think I've ever seen a tight end use leverage as well as he does. You see him when he runs routes, he'll drop his shoulder into the safety or whoever is defending him, and he will just create 3 to 4 yards of separation every single time in the short and intermediate areas, especially against zone coverage. He's going to find space 9 times out of 10. And if you have to force the ball with him, he's going to catch it. He's been very sure-handed this season. He finds those areas in space. He's not going to be like a George Kittle or a Travis Kelce that is going to get big chunk yard plays. That's our other tight end, Dallas Goedert, who's a whole another animal that I think could be a very good matchup in this game. But Zach Ertz, if you guys come out in heavy zone, I think you're going to see a lot of him. It's going to be more a death by a thousand cuts because you're going to get 8 to 15-yard pickups with him every time. You're not going to see 45 to 70-yard yak catches like you see from a George Kittle style, but he's very elite in many aspects of his game. The connection with Nick Foles hasn't been as great as it's been with Carson Wentz, but, I mean, you look back to the Super Bowl, those guys, they know the timing of all the routes together. He knows that Zach is going to catch the ball 9 times out of 10. And he can look outside to an old friend, Alshon Jeffrey, that I'm sure many Bears fans aren't too happy with after what he said yesterday. But there's a lot of matchups outside of Zach Ertz that I think they're going to try to work, because Dallas Goedert and the emergence of him in his rookie year has really been something that's gone under the radar within the NFL. And I think he can provide a big matchup nightmare. If a guy like Eddie Jackson has to go out and cover Zach Ertz, you're going to expose another safety. Even though, I mean, Amos is pretty good in coverage himself, I think Goddard is just very good in that department as well. And he's a big guy who can rip off 70-yard plays. He did it against Dallas. Unfortunately, he was called back on a very, very bad offensive pass interference. But he has that magic. Nelson Agholor has been getting involved in the deep game. You still have a threat like Golden Tate, who hasn't really been utilized in these last couple weeks. And I know they traded a third-round pick for him, so they want to get the value out of him. Hopefully they can work him into a game plan. But this team, when they're working, they get a lot of 12 personnel on the field. They run out of 12 personnel on the field. They pass out of 12 personnel and get those two tight ends into space and really make things happen. But I've heard that Eddie Jackson might be a no-go for this game, even though he practiced today. What do you think his status is come Sunday?
It's really hard to tell at this point with Eddie Jackson, and I know that's not a great answer to your question, but mm-hmm. he sits out practice on Wednesday, completely limited on Thursday. I would expect, because it's a playoff game, that he'll give it a go, even if he's not exactly at 100%. It is an ankle injury. You know, it looked kind of just like a real bad sprain, and I don't even know if it was ever characterized as a high ankle sprain, but it wasn't like an actual break, so it might be the kind of thing that is more able to be played through, even if it's uncomfortable, rather than, you know, a broken arm or you know, a dislocated shoulder or something. It's a little bit harder to just walk off. So at this point, I think Eddie Jackson's going to do everything in his power to play in this game, and I would expect him to most likely be out there, but it's much more of an unknown at this point. It's closer to 50-50 than it is a sure thing. But we've kind of touched on a lot of these, you know, the big name factors in this game. But up next, I want to dive into maybe a couple of under the radar players that we each think could be difference makers on our teams. And we'll wrap up with a little bit of a final game prediction. Keep it locked right here on this Locked On Bears, Locked On Eagles crossover podcast. So, Gino, as we wrap up our look at the Bears-Eagles playoff game here, I wanted to just touch on some guys. You know, we've talked about the big names. It's Trubisky, it's Foles, there's, you know, Khalil Mack and Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, et cetera. Who's a guy on the Eagles that you feel like maybe Bears fans don't know that much about but could potentially be a difference maker or a game changer? You kind of mentioned one with Dallas Goedert, but give me somebody else that, you know, maybe you mentioned him a little bit, but that you just think could be that true X factor for Philadelphia.
Yeah, I know everybody knows Fletcher Cox. I think it's his defensive tackle compadre in Tim Jernigan. When he is at the top of his game and he can get after the quarterback, he's one of the top 20 defensive tackles in the league, and he has that very good explosive first step. And if you're going to force a lot of doubles to Fletcher Cox's side, which I'm going to assume you're going to have to for the way he's been playing the last 3 weeks, Tim Jernigan and even Haloti Ngata, those guys are going to have to step up, because Fletcher Cox, he can do basically anything, but double teams, of course, they're going to give him fits. But if those two guys can get to Mitch and force him, try to keep him inside the pocket, I know it's going to be tough, but if they can keep edge contained and really get to Mitch through the middle of the pocket and make things murky for him, I think that's going to be the most effective way to beat this team. Because if they force them to get into that quick passing game, you could kind of bring the safeties down a little bit. Don't let one guy I'm really scared about, don't let Anthony Miller, who's in a very good route runner, get down the field, which he can do against these Eagles corners. So they really have to disrupt things early, make it murky, get that pocket murky for Mitch Trubisky. And I think Tim Jernigan has all the potential in the world to be an under-the-radar guy that can make this happen Sunday.
Are there any lingering issues with, you know, since we've been talking about injuries here, any lingering issues with the back injury that kept him on IR for most of the start of the season?
He played one game and then he was out for two or three games with back spasms. I think they've rested him enough. He hasn't really had symptoms since then that were too bad to keep him out of practices or anything, but he should be good to go. Michael Bennett was held out of practice today with a foot injury. He hopefully should be good to go, but in regards to Jernigan, he should be all set. Hopefully he doesn't tweak it before the game because that would be very bad. But this team's finally starting to get healthy for once, and it's a good feeling because I know what it's like to be the team that has no injuries basically and have everything clicking, much like Chicago does right now. So to see a team healthy for once is a very good sign.
Yeah, and you're right about that, with the Bears being one of the healthiest teams in the league this season. It only started picking up, actually, in Week 17 against the Vikings. You know, Allen Robinson kind of sits out, and Eddie Jackson and Aaron Lynch suffered injuries a couple weeks ago against the Packers, but then Taylor Gabriel suffers a rib injury against the Vikings, and he's expected to be good to go, and Anthony Miller's shoulder pops out of its socket against the Vikings as well. He also is a full participant at practice. That shoulder has popped out of its socket and fully dislocated multiple times this season, and he has refused to be shut down and keeps coming back and playing through it, so there's always a chance that a big hit could take him out of this Eagles game, but I agree that I think he can be a potential X factor here as a guy that the Bears kind of tried to scale down a little bit as the year went on, maybe put a little bit too much on his plate, but I would expect them to turn that up just a little bit more. But in terms of maybe another guy that we haven't really talked about much on this podcast, I think there's a couple guys that come to mind, and I wanted to go offensive line, but it's not as sexy to say that it's going to be a huge X factor. But you know, the right tackle, Bobby Massey, has been a guy that has been heavily, heavily criticized in Chicago as the clear weak link on the offensive line. He's given up a lot of pressure over the last couple of years, but in the second half of the season, I believe he has the lowest pressure rate of any right tackle in the NFL by Pro Football Focus's data, and he's really kind of turned the corner a little bit. Whether it's a temporary thing or a permanent thing, I don't know, but his pass protection has been so much more improved as the year went on. And so, you know, you look at him matching up with guys like Michael Bennett and Chris Long and Brandon Graham, depending on how they want to rotate their defensive ends in this game. All of a sudden, I find myself feeling a little bit more confident in the protection on that side of the offensive line. And the weak link on that interior becomes James Daniels, the rookie second-round pick out of Iowa, a guy who had started the season a little bit stronger, and I thought he maybe wouldn't even have too many of transition issues with the NFL with how he seemed to be able to plug right in and play. But as the year's gone on, I think opposing defensive linemen have started to figure him out a little bit more, and he hasn't been able to recover as well and really consistently stay in front of guys and, you know, stay balanced in pass protection in particular. So that's where my concern lies a little bit on the interior of this Bears offensive line, going up against a guy like Fletcher Cox. And it's weird because Daniels did fine against Aaron Donald like 4 or 5 weeks ago and ultimately helped keep him pretty limited on the scoreboard. But it's like since then, for whatever reason, he's dropped off a bit on his performance, and I'm concerned about that part of the interior of the offensive line. Is there any one big concern on the Eagles for you that stands out? I mean, I think the secondary and the injuries that they've had there is obviously the red flag that we kind of see on the outside. Is that accurate, or is there another area on this team that you're even more concerned about in this matchup?
I think you said it earlier with the linebackers in regards to Tariq Cohen. I think he's going to be the nightmare trying to defend him, of course. They're going to want to get him into space, something that the Eagles linebackers haven't been great with. The open field tackling has improved some in the last couple weeks, but it's still not great. But, I mean, we haven't even mentioned the one name that we were bound to mention, and Khalil Mack. We just have Isaac Seumalo coming back this week, who is our left guard. He's replacing Stefan Wisniewski, who he replaced earlier in the season before injury. He did pretty well, but his downfall is his functional strength and foot speed. And for a guy that can move as fast as Khalil Mack, if they can run some stunts and get him on the inside, get him on the shoulder of Wisniewski, I think it could be a bad day for Nick Foles. So it's going to be interesting to see how they scheme against him. They did very well against Aaron Donald. They did very well against J.J. Watt. But if they can get Khalil Mack and Goldman and Hicks and all those guys moving, much like the Eagles on the other side, I think it could create a muddy pocket for Philadelphia. And I really think it's going to come down to, one, who has less turnovers, and two, who can keep a cleaner pocket for their quarterback, because both teams' run defenses are very good. Chicago, they're the best in the league right now. Philadelphia has been getting back to form as of late. But whoever can pass the best and whoever can hawk to the football the best, which I'm scared Chicago has the upper hand in that department, I think is going to come out on top.
I couldn't have put it any better myself. How are you feeling for a potential game prediction here? I have a feeling you're a bit more confident in the defending Super Bowl champions than most Bears fans are going to be, but what's your kind of general feeling? I agree that those two factors are going to play the biggest effect, so how do you predict this plays out?
So the third factor that I didn't mention, which I think is going to be the reason the Eagles win this game, is playoff experience. You cannot take away that playoff experience from this Eagles team persevering and going to the Super Bowl and beating Tom Brady and the week before beating a Minnesota team and then barely squeaking by a Falcons team. This team knows how to overcome adversity. So if it's a close game late and you have to rely on one team to either get a score or make a stop, I think Philadelphia has the upper hand. The line right now is 41 points for the over. I think it's going to be a lower scoring game. I could see it being a 24-13 Eagles or maybe even like a 20-17 Eagles. But in the end, I think the playoff experience, I think the magic of Nick Foles, I think the defensive line, I think those are the big factors that are going to come out on top. But on the other side of the football, who knows? Mitch Trubisky could get into form. Your defensive line could create four fumbles for all we know, and you guys could have three interceptions, and it could just be a mess of a game. But I think it's going to be lower scoring. Final guess, I'll go 24-13 Eagles.
Yeah, I definitely can envision scenarios where the Chicago Bears are going to lose, where the Chicago Bears could lose this game. And I agree with you, low scoring. I think it's going to potentially come down to a couple of late possessions in the fourth quarter. And what might scare me the most is just the Bears kicker really struggling late in the season. That I
could
see.
Oh, we know Cody Parkey.
Oh yeah, you know Cody Parkey. That it comes down to, you know, it's tied at, or maybe it's 23-20 and the Bears can kick a field goal to send it into overtime or something, and I could easily see that one doinking off the upright and being an issue. But I do have to feel like the Bears are going to win this game. I do think Nick Foles is going to play as the better quarterback, but I think this Bears defense is at a different level than the Eagles are. I think as much as these two offenses are the same and there's a lot of similarities in this team, I will take the playmaking in the secondary of this Bears over the playmaking in the secondary of the Eagles. And then offensively, they both have a great complement of weapons, and they both are going to be able to move the ball, I think, pretty well between the 20s. And I just trust the Bears' red zone execution a little bit more than I do the Eagles as well. So the number I've been kind of riding on is like a 24-20 Bears victory, where the Eagles put up some real points on this Bears defense, but the Bears are just barely able to edge them out, whether it comes down to last possession or there's a kind of a late big play one way or the other. Maybe a late interception seals the game for the Bears or a late turnover at some point. But I like I said at the top, I think this is going to be the most exciting matchup of Wild Card Weekend, and I'm glad you were able to join us here, Gino, for this crossover Bears Eagles Locked On Podcast Network podcast. Let all the Locked On Bears listeners know where they can find you and your co-host for some more Eagles analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys, of course, know you could check us out on the Locked On Podcast Network, our website, Locked On Eagles. You could catch me on Twitter at Gino_LOE. That's G-I-N-O, not G-E-N-O, like Geno Smith. You could catch Lou DiBiase at DiBiase. That's D-I-B-I-A-S-E-L-O-E on Twitter. And then our official Twitter account is at Locked On Birds. And thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you. And I really think whoever wins this game has the potential to be the future representative of the NFC in the Super Bowl. So good luck to you, my friend. It was a pleasure talking to you, and fly, Eagles, fly.
Well, all your Eagles fans, let them know that they need more Chicago Bears analysis. It is on Locked On Bears. You can find my work with NBC Sports Chicago, with the Bears Wire as well. And I am on Twitter at Cox Sports 1. I always say it is like Fox Sports 1, but with a C instead of an F. Gino, again, really appreciate all your time this evening, and may the best team win.
Absolutely. I just hope it's a great game. I think it will be. So, in the end, fly, Eagles, fly. It was a pleasure talking to you.
You too.